Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Black Girl Missing, a podcast that covers stories of black girls who were reported missing when they were under the age of 18. We are live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, D.C. I'm live from the Jersey Shore, and this podcast is brought to you by Full Service Radio. Due to the sensitive and sometimes graphic nature of these cases, we advise listeners to use caution when listening. Black Girl Missing is supported in part by New Voices for Reproductive Justice. New Voices for Reproductive Justice is a social change organization dedicated to the health and well-being of black women, femmes, and girls. Checking in, how is everybody doing?
How are you out there in the capital of Wakanda? Checking in from across the seas.
Lord have mercy. Y'all gonna stop playing me because I can't be traveling to D.C. every week.
It's all good. Happy Women's.
But in Wakanda, we don't have daylight savings time, so just letting y'all know.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Happy International Women's Day.
Absolutely. It's my favorite day of the year.
Look at that. Yay. Clap
Yay.
For that.
Woo!
Some applause there. Just to reiterate to people that this is a journey in labor of love, and we're not always going to all be here, except for, the one woman who lives here. So, yes, Asa does, call into this show. She is one third of this amazing team of women, and I love these two so much. I am Feminista Jones, one of your hosts.
And I am Nikki.
And
as said before, I'm Asa.
Oh, what a show we have for you today. This story is so wild and there's so much, and we're going to get into it. But right now, Nikki, why don't you start us off with our Aisha alert?
Absolutely. We open each show reviewing cases of girls who are currently missing. And we call it the Aisha Alert. We encourage you to pay close attention, check our social media, and help us help the families who are still seeking answers and long for their loved one's safe return. We'd like to note that we create these lists of currently missing black girls in real time. So by the time the podcast episodes are released, there may have been some changes, and you can always check our socials for updates on that. We will have information posted on each case, and if you stay updated, it's usually real time. If it's not, you can always reach out to us and ask us a question. The very first girl that we have is Keasia Walker. She was last seen Thursday, February 27th, around 1 a.m. at her residence in Bethlehem Township and may be in Allentown or Philadelphia, police say. She is 4'8", weighing 120 pounds and having an athletic build. She has brown eyes and black hair and has a nose ring. If you have any information on her, please call investigator Ed Fox at 610-419-9646 or email at efox@bethlehemtwp.com. Our second girl is Samira Roberts. She was last seen Monday, March 1st in the 4800 block of Oakland Boulevard. Her parents said when they went to pick up Samira from school, she didn't come outside. They're worried because they haven't seen or heard from their daughter since. Officials say Samira is 5'5" tall, weighs 122 pounds, and has a dark complexion. She was last seen wearing a black hooded sweatshirt with an orange butterfly, a gray shirt with the words baby girl written on it, blue jeans, black shoes, and sunglasses. If you have any information, please call Detroit Police at 313-596-5640. Lastly, we have Sanaya McFadden. She was last seen around 3 p.m. on Wednesday, February 26th, leaving Palm Beach Central High School and it's likely that she's in the Wellington, Lake Worth Beach, West Palm Beach, Riviera Beach, or Palm Beach Gardens areas. She's 5'3" and weighs 110 pounds and was wearing black pants, a black hoodie, and black sandals. If you have any information, please call 561-434-8700 in reference to case number 200000, that's 60937.
Thank you so much. We continue to do this work and try to amplify these stories, and they just keep coming. There's just so many of them, and we wish that we could cover them all, but you know, we just try to do what we can. Okay, wow, today's story. This is a story you may be familiar with because it was all over the news. You all remember when this happened?
And it's fairly recent, yeah.
Yeah, I remember this. I think I was like 2021 when this happened. Mm-hmm. I remember it. This is the case of Kamaya Mobley. She has different names, and we're going to get into that. But this story really was one of the first times that I recall a nationwide kind of search for a black girl. And it was just one of these things where, you know, I was so shocked by what happened, only to find out that this happens fairly regularly. So we're going to dive right into this, okay? And my amazing co-host will help me get through this because I have some pause moments. I have some pause moments for this one.
Yeah.
Sometimes we got to pause. All right. Okay. Shanara Mobley had a tough life. According to an interview she had with the Florida Times Union, she was molested from ages 9 to 11, and she said she was basically on her own by age 13. She skipped school, ran away, ran the streets as a teen. She'd even been in juvenile detention. She says that she didn't have a stable place to live, and she would often crash on couches when she could. She says she even lied about her age so she could live in babysitting jobs. When Shanara was 15, she became pregnant by then 22-year-old Craig Aiken. In an interview with Ayan LaVanzant, he said that they were seeing each other for 2 years. This wasn't the first time she was pregnant, though. She'd miscarried at age 14. At that time, Craig was dealing drugs and had his own issues. And so when it came time for her to give birth, Craig was actually incarcerated in the Montgomery Correctional Facility for both the drugs and for impregnating a 15-year-old girl. Can I pause? This is my first pause.
Go ahead.
This is my first pause.
Go ahead.
Because we often talk about this issue.
Yes.
With predators in our community and the girls being blamed for being fast.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant at 14 with this child by him.
A grown man.
He was old enough to buy alcohol.
Now, when he was interviewed on Iyanla's show, he did say he didn't know that she was that young until she had gotten pregnant. That's when he found out. Now, that brings up another point. When you're on the street and you don't have a strong parental presence at home, you don't have a stable home life, you do what you can. And if I know that dating an older guy is going to give me some sense of security, some sense of worth, that's probably what I'm going to do.
Absolutely.
And if he's dealing drugs, that means he has money. He can take care of me. He can buy me the things that I need. I'm not saying it's best, but we do what we can.
Right.
That may have been the best she could do at that time.
Right. And also the excuse, I didn't know she was that old, never ever curls over for me.
Yeah.
Because you talk to a 15-year-old,
you know that they're 15.
That's a child.
And I think go ahead.
There's no excuse for it. There's no, well, they were really mature for their age. No.
And I think in this case,
I don't buy it.
That may have been the situation. This girl had been, you know, again, molested since she was 9, which does force girls to grow up really fast. She was running the streets. She had to survive. She was lying about her age. I'm sure that there were certain things about her that she tried to come off as, but maybe 17.
Yeah.
You know, at most.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, She was staying with her uncle at the time that she was later in her pregnancy. And when they wanted to induce her, she didn't want to be induced. This was at the University Medical Center. She didn't want to be induced. She just wanted to go for it. I think after her having the miscarriage, she was very focused on that. I remember reading her saying that she was trying to do everything right. Eat better, exercise, drink more water, stay away from smokers, all that kind of thing. So her uncle, you know, her water ended up breaking 9 days after they wanted to induce her. And I got to say that it's not unusual for them to want to induce teen births because they are very, very high risk. And so a lot of times they like to control the situation. She went into labor July 9th, and then she labored overnight. And on the morning of July 10th, 1998, she had an 8-pound, 2.5-ounce, 21-inch baby girl that she named Kamaya. And she says that that name came from a girl she was with in juvenile detention who had a daughter by the same name. Craig says that it was her and his sister who named the baby, so I'm not really sure what that connection is, but she got the name from somewhere else. So the next morning, she had a nurse with her for most of the day. The nurse was very attentive and kind, and Shamara warmed up to her. She was taking advice from her on how to hold her and feed her and things like that. Now, we do know that Shamara's mother wasn't really involved in her life at this time, so she wasn't there. So I'm sure it felt really, really good to have someone there by her side. I've been in that situation. You feel like with the ways that Black women are treated and how risky it is from our maternal health, we get neglected and things like that. It makes sense that she would cling to someone that is showing her affection and attention and things like that. She felt this connection. It was this older woman who was being kind, and the baby took well to her. And this woman's name was Gloria Williams. We find out that Gloria Williams was not an employee at the hospital, nor was she a nurse. Gloria Williams would become the woman who would change Shamara's life forever. This woman, Gloria Williams, let's talk about her, okay? From our research, and there's so much about this, this is pretty much what we're able to understand about her. In the summer of 1998, Gloria Williams was pregnant and expecting a child. And at that time, we know that she was involved with an abusive man. And it's very possible that the stress of his ongoing abuse may have led to her having the eventual miscarriage that she had at home.
Which is common.
Which is very common. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard women like Beyonce and Vanessa Bryant talk about how the stress of the emotional abuse and cheating they experienced from their partners led to them having miscarriages. I will say that I've experienced the same. At the time, she was involved with a man named Charles Manigo. And he said that he was on the road at the time that all of this happened. During that time that he was on the road, she miscarried and she was devastated. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, she may have snapped. There's no way to describe how a person can feel. You know, it's one of those things. So
it's
totally devastating, especially when you've been just preparing for this. And it's really unfortunate that there are so many women that have to live in these kinds of situations where the father of their expected child is abusive and verbally and mentally and physically abusive. I think that that's the highest risk for a woman's death is when she's pregnant, right?
Absolutely. You're at the threshold of life and death.
Yeah, at any given moment. So anyway, she snapped. And at some point, she got into her car. And she drove from South Carolina down to Jacksonville, Florida. Now, the reports say that she had a plan. In her mind, she worked out this plan. She bought the scrubs. She picked the hospital. She did all these things.
She had a car seat and a baby
bag.
She
had a car seat and a baby bag. She was ready. But at the same time, she was also preparing for her own child to come. So she had these things. Mm-hmm. And there is psychosis behind this. Mm-hmm. Like, we know this. Like, when if you ever watch Snapped or you ever listen to anything like that, it's not just like 5 minutes for most people. You can actually like kind of click out, as we would say in the hood, for days.
Yeah.
And really just have no... You can function properly. You can eat 3 meals a day. You can go about things. But your mind is not there.
No.
So we don't know what happened. But what we do know is that she went to this hospital, had everything ready, and she was going to, you know, she was going to come home with a baby. She wasn't going to go back to this house with no child.
Right.
And so I was really thinking about this. I was like, you know, what if part of it is because she feared what would happen to her if she went, if she lost this baby? Would he kill her too?
And she also made it clear that her boyfriend or husband is her mate at the time. Her having this baby was really important to him.
Yes.
He felt like that was going to make him a man.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of men who treat children that way. It's not about them wanting to actually be a father, actually be a parent. Mm-hmm. They just want to know that their reproductive system works.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. They just want to know, can they want reproduce? Progeny.
Yep. They want to live on. Yep.
They want to be able to say, I have a child out here in the world. I'm a man now because I have one.
And we know that, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of women that are in abusive relationships, sometimes when they're pregnant, it's the only time they have some alleviation of things. It's the only time they feel good. They're praised. They're celebrated because this baby is coming. You know what I mean? So there's so many things that could have factored in to what happened. But here's what we do know. She went into this hospital, the University Medical Center. She went in and it was in the morning and she went to the neonatal unit fully dressed in scrubs. She was very kind and warm-hearted. Nobody thought twice. I mean, she is a black woman in scrubs, like, she's going to look like a nurse. You know what I mean? You see a lot of those in labor and delivery.
Absolutely.
She found a newborn, found the mother, and went and connected with the mother. She sat by Shamara's bed the whole time. She was helping her feed the baby, helping her learn how to hold the baby, you know, helping her holding the baby when Shamara would take a nap, which was, you know, so important for so many new moms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and this was around the time where they started not taking the babies out the rooms.
Right.
Right. So, like, they started shifting maternal care. So the baby would stay there. So Shamara was like, okay, well, the baby's here. I'm going to take this nap. You stay here with the baby. And that's kind of how she was doing it. Well, then there was a point at the in the afternoon where Gloria Williams says to Shamara, well, the baby needs to be tested for something. Mm-hmm. We're going to take the baby and we'll be right back. And Shamara's like, where are you going? You know, whatever. She's like, no, don't worry about it. You get some rest. We're going to take the baby and we'll be right back. And she trusted her. And she believed her.
So there's two things that I keep thinking about when I think about that part of this story. Mm-hmm. One, she carried the baby out in her arms. Mm-hmm. She didn't stick her back in the little, you know, they stick them in like a little... Tupperware container. They put the baby
in. It was like baby Tupperware.
And they wheel them back out.
Yeah.
And then they wheel them back in. And you know, wherever they're taking them, they're wheeling them. They're not carrying them because that's a safety issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one, that was a huge red flag. But again, Shamara is a child. Mm-hmm. She's 16.
She's 16 at this time. Yeah.
She's 16. She doesn't have a lot of guidance. There's a lot of teen moms that don't receive the education that they should be during their pregnancy because people are too busy shaming them for being young and pregnant. Instead of saying, hey, let me prepare you for this, instead they're busy wagging their fingers. So it's very possible that she didn't receive a lot of education that she should have during this time. So as this is happening, she's a kid, and this lady walked out with this baby in her arm.
And nobody stopped her.
And we keep going back to nobody said anything.
Right. But also, if Shamara and Gloria are in this room all day, no other nurses, doctors came in and were like, oh, who are you?
Right. Mm-hmm. Because if you work in labor and delivery, you work in the maternity ward, you see these same people every day. You know who works
exactly
there. And not one person stopped and said, do you know that lady?
Also, that means that people were not checking on her. There was no lactation. There was no lactation expert coming to visit her. And I can attest to this because when I had my kid, I didn't get a lactation specialist till the literally a couple of hours before I was about to walk out the door. And I had a C-section, so you know I was there for a few days. So they weren't checking. You know, this idea of not being checked on.
Yes.
Not be like, they're supposed to be checking on these babies like every couple of hours. And the moms are supposed to be checking for any bleeding. Nobody came in to be like, and it's 8 hours.
Yes.
This was an 8 hour, like,
that's a long time.
The baby, 8 hours between the baby is born and taken. Nobody came.
And there has been a complete shift change during this time.
Complete shift change. Yes.
If you think about the time of day, there was a shift change.
So nobody knew that Gloria didn't work there.
And it also I just thought about this. Maybe she took advantage of that shift change.
Ah. That's smart.
Yeah.
She's a smart woman.
Yeah.
This is not a stupid woman.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So that's basically what happened. So 8 hours later, 8 hours after Kamaya is born, she's being whisked away by this woman, Gloria Williams, who had just had a miscarriage and decided she was not going home without a baby of her own. She gets home, she takes her home, you know, she ends up naming her Alexis Kelly Manigo. According to Charles, the partner that she had, he didn't think much of it because he said he was on the road.
Yep.
She didn't contact him. He just assumed, you know, she went into labor, came home. That could happen. You're a truck driver, whatever. You're gone for a couple of weeks at a time. You don't really know. It all kind of lined up.
Back in 1998, we didn't have cell phones.
No.
It wasn't readily available.
No, that was not the thing.
If you had money, you might have had one of those, like, Velcro car phones.
Yeah, I didn't get a cell phone till, my senior year in college, and I was like, 2002. I didn't want that. My mom had a cell phone, though. It was like 75 cents a second. It was great.
My mom had the Velcro, John.
Yeah. So we didn't have that communication, right? So she names her Alexis, takes her home. And, you know, for the next 16 years, she's raising her as her daughter.
Yeah.
Kamaya will never know, I should say Alexis, will never know that she was ever Kamaya.
Yeah.
Now, this story did make the news, and I remember it. There were billboards on the buses. There was a $250,000 award offered for any tips that led to her recovery. They had vigils for weeks after she was taken. There was one even like on the 1 year anniversary. Most of the community rallied behind Shamara, but there were some that weren't 100% on board with this. They, you know, Shamara said that she faced a lot of suspicion and people suggested that she sold the baby.
Yeah.
Or maybe even worked with Gloria to scam the system somehow.
Yeah.
And as I was thinking about that, like, even some of her friends and her family were skeptical. So can you imagine what it's like to be 16 years old? You finally have a baby that you wanted. You finally feel like you're ready to turn your life around. You have someone to love you unconditionally, only to have that taken away from you a few hours after she was born.
And then have people vilify you.
And vilify you.
Yes. For it.
Now, at the time, there was only one detective that was assigned to the case from the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and his name was Detective Phil Kearney. He was the lone officer that they had. And then the year after the kidnapping, they had over 3,000 leads that didn't really go anywhere. So you have this one detective kind of leading this case, 3,000 leads. They end up nowhere. He's got to sort through all that. Everything that we know from you know, Alexis herself or Kamaya herself is that she had a really great upbringing. Gloria was involved in church. She was well-liked in the community. She was affectionate. She was loving. Everyone, you know, kind of clung to her. She doted on Alexis because that was her angel baby, right? She gave her everything that she ever wanted. And I just kind of wanted to pause. And when I talk about the connection of an angel baby, I want you to think about Vanessa Bryant and Gianna Bryant, because Gianna was born after Vanessa had a miscarriage.
Yeah.
And so when you think of that special kind of bond for that baby you have after the miscarriage, there's something there for many parents. People said she even spoiled her, let her get away with murder, right? Like, this is your baby. Wait, you know, she really raised her with all the love that a child could possibly want.
Yeah.
She wanted for nothing. When Alexis was five, they left Charles Manigault. Gloria finally left him because she got tired of his stuff. And they left and they moved. And later on, you know, she would... and I'm using Alexis and Kamaya interchangeably because this girl was raised thinking that she was Alexis and was still kind of working on accepting that she is Kamaya.
Yeah.
Right? So, mm-hmm. you know, that's why I'm using them interchangeably. But she would later say that she went on this rant on Facebook where she was just like, this guy Charles, he's a liar. He's never been there for us. He walked out on us or we left or whatever the situation was. So he was not in her life from age five on. And they never got married. You know, him and her and Gloria never got married. So, but outside of that, she still was, you know, doing the things. So we fast forward to she's like age 16. Not because she has to do it, because she wants to do it. She wants to get a job. Every teen wants a job.
She wants her own money.
She wants her own money.
Her
she
own
wants
money.
Her little $250 a week. That little $250 a week go far when you are a teenager.
She wanted that.
She wanted that. Her friends were working. Everybody had a job at the mall. She wanted to get it. And then she went. She applied. She got a job. And they were like, well, you got to provide your papers.
Just bring us your Social Security card.
Birth certificate. Just let us, you know, that's... standard for any job, right?
Mama, I need my papers.
Mama, I need my papers. Where they at? Mama was like, whoa, well, but what do you need a job for?
I buy you everything you need.
I got you everything that you need. You don't need a job. You'll be fine. And, you know, Kamaya was really like, Alexis, she was very much like, I want this. This is when Gloria finally had to tell her daughter what happened.
Point of pause, she was able to, you know, effectively and completely care for her without ever having to show anyone a birth certificate, Social Security card, registering her for school activities, doctors, insurance.
It's hard to say how she was able to do this. But I think part of the story that matters is that they lived in a tiny, tiny, tiny town in South Carolina where they may not have been so strict when it
Waterboro,
came.
Waterboro,
South Carolina.
Everybody knew everybody.
Yeah, and it was one of those little itty-bitty, you know, country mouse towns where they may not have been that strict on documentation. And we always go back to this every show. Documentation is
it's super important. And
she
took her to be immunized. She had immunization records. She had all the stuff you needed to get in school, which is really what they don't ask for your Social Security card to get in school.
Nope.
So you know, somehow she was able to get around this. But you do need that Social Security number when you about to make the money.
Uncle Sam wanted to
because Uncle Sam wanted a little piece of your $250 a week. So this is what she has to tell her. But here's where it gets amazing. Kamaya was like, okay, we not going to tell nobody. It don't matter. I get it. We not going to tell. Who all knows? And that's when she learns that, like, the person she thought was her dad didn't even know.
Nope.
Nobody knew. And Charles does go back and say, he was like, you know, I didn't know. I never knew that this wasn't my child. Had no reason to believe that it wasn't his child. Mm-hmm. So Gloria was the only person that knew this. Mm-hmm. And so basically Alexis was like, do we have to tell anybody?
Yeah.
And Gloria was the one that was like, yes, we kind of do. But then I think it was like, if I remember this correctly, Kamaya was kind of like the one who was like, nah, we're good. We don't have to tell anybody. Let's I don't need to get not. A job. Let's just not tell anybody. Except she goes and tells her homegirl.
Yep.
And this would be the thing that would change everything.
Yep.
She confided into her friend, which makes sense. You're going to talk to your friends.
When
you got to tell somebody.
When you're a teenager, your friends are your everything.
And you find out that your mama ain't your mama and your mama kidnapped you.
Yeah.
You got to tell somebody.
Who you, yeah.
Who's keeping that to themselves?
Guess what I found out.
So, did you know that my mama jacked me from the hospital? Like, she's not even processing this well. Anyway, there's a tip, an anonymous tip that gets into, you know, Jacksonville police or whatever. Somebody says, I know the whereabouts of Kamaya Mobley. And they think it's this friend. They can't really verify, but it's probably the friend. Anyway, mm-hmm. here they come, and the police are coming, and they're just like, all right, we have this, you know, this tip, and we believe that this is what's going on. And Gloria was like, you got to come back with a warrant for the DNA. You're not going to get a swab without it, right? Again, smart woman. This is not a stupid woman. They come back. They got the warrant. They do the DNA. They swab. Everything matches up. You know, Alexis Manigo is, in fact, Kamaya Mobley. So, on January 13th, 2017, Gloria Williams is arrested for kidnapping. I think they add a charge of, like, interfering with custody or, like, an investigation because, I want to remind everybody, they didn't tell anybody about this. In fact, it was over a year later that they decided to tell anyone, you know? And so she's walking around with this secret for a year and a half. No therapy, no support, nothing. Just, my mama stole me, and I'm just going to work it out. So she's arrested. Jacksonville police announced that they've located her. By this time, the detective on the case, his name is Rodney McKean. He's the cold case detective, and he had been assigned the case back in 2008. He's relieved, right? Like, wow, we finally figured this out. Okay, so you all thought that that was the story. No. This gets good. Okay, so this is when all the drama begins. Kamaya, Alexis, finds out she's Kamaya, and we'll refer to her as Kamaya going forward. Mm-hmm. She is not mad at her mama, who is Gloria Williams.
Not upset at all.
She is not thinking of Shamara Mobley as her mom.
Not at all.
She's like, she knows that's her mother biologically.
Yep.
But her mama is Gloria Williams.
Yeah.
And she has sympathy and empathy for her. She's visiting her in jail. Mm-hmm. She's calling her. Wants to talk to her mama every day.
Put money on her.
Put money on her accounts from her little $250 a week that she was getting. She was putting something on mama's books.
Yeah.
And they're maintaining their relationship. And this breeds a lot of resentment for Shamara.
Understandably.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Yeah. Because here's what I didn't say is that every year on Kamaya's birthday, Shamara would bake a cake, cut a slice, wrap it up, and put it in a freezer.
And she had 18 slices.
She had 18 slices of cake.
Yeah.
That's how long it was. So by now, by the time all of this is revealed, Kamaya's an adult. So she's an adult. She can do what she wants.
Yep.
Right? This mother that had this child ripped from her arms, basically, I mean, if we really think about it,
yeah.
and stolen, mm-hmm. never really moved past that point. She went on, she had more children, but in one of her interviews, she said she couldn't keep a partner for more than a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
She didn't. She couldn't trust anyone. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to let her children out of her sight. Mm-hmm. Like, this woman was really traumatized by this.
Yeah.
And again, it's happening at 16. We think about brain development. We think about the impact of trauma at such an early age, what that does to you. This is somebody who was already traumatized from sexual assault and running out there with drugs and things like that.
I have a lot of, I'm not a huge fan of Vianla. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes she gets it right. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned during the episode where Kamaya was featured that it was very possible that Ms. Mobley was still
stuck there,
still stuck. At 16, still stuck at 15, still stuck at I don't have support. You took my child from me, and I'm a kid, and I don't know how to move forward with this. I don't know how to process this. And that's very possible that she may even still, even now, still be stuck. We all have an inner child.
Yes. And and she's a hood chick, right?
Yep.
She dropped out of school. You know, didn't really get a lot of that. I mean, she's, like, again, she's been able to do okay for her life since then. But her and Craig weren't together. Remember, Craig was locked up. So she went through all of this. When he found out he had a daughter, it was really like, your daughter's missing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So at the same time, he's finding out that she had a baby girl. He's finding out that this baby girl was also kidnapped.
And can't do anything
about it. Because he's incarcerated.
Yeah. And it's not like these people are going to therapy. They're not going to counselors.
Nobody's had any counselors. Yeah. Look, let's keep going because it gets deeper.
It gets crazier.
So Gloria, as she's arrested and she's charged and she's on trial and there's all these witnesses and things like that, you know, Kamaya's like, my mom's not a felon. You know, she didn't really do anything wrong. Like, I get it, she kidnapped or whatever, but she didn't hurt me. She didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And so for her, like, she's just like, when it, you know, of course she gets, you know, they're going to find her guilty. She admits it. She went from a not guilty plea to a guilty plea to kind of reduce her sentence and things like that. When they got to the sentencing, Shamara was the one who kind of showed out and was really like, I want her to get the death penalty for this. Excuse me. She wanted her to have the death penalty for this. And the judge was like, okay, we're not going to execute this woman for this.
Yeah.
But she wanted her to get the maximum penalties. And she wanted to bar Kamaya from being able to talk. She wanted to file a restraining order so that Kamaya could not talk to Gloria because she felt that as long as they kept talking, she couldn't bond with her daughter.
Yeah.
And so when they had the original reunion, right, they were talking on FaceTime and things like that, and then they had the reunion, her dad and her mom, you know, her biological parents, they got together, what have you. Kamaya actually gravitated a little more towards her father than her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was like going through this. I was like, well, why is this happening? Why is this happening? And part of it, you know, from what I'm thinking, and this is me putting on the trauma-informed social worker hat, is she can't blame her father for what happened. Okay. And I think that there's a part of Kamaya that blames her mother for allowing her to be taken.
Yeah.
And feels like she was irresponsible.
Yes.
But then on the other side of it, according to Kamaya, Shamara has not been the nicest person. There's been a lot of attitude. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of tension. She said that, you know, if she posts pictures of her and Gloria on Facebook, Shamara will block her on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, she'll talk to her one day. She won't talk to her the other day. When they're supposed to go on this Ayanla show, Shamara said she was going to go. She didn't show up.
Nope.
So you have this woman who is processing her own, like, damn near 20-year trauma.
Right.
Is not able to show up for this daughter that really needs her to be stable.
But Craig does show up.
Craig does show up.
And he has a wife who also shows
up. Who shows up. And it's consistency. And they got other kids. And so he, you know, he is bonding with her over, like, almost kind of how weekend, you know, they call them weekend parents or weekend dads or whatever, you know, kind of come, oh, I'm going to show up now. And there's that connection there, which again goes to our whole patriarchy and all this other nonsense. But it's like she feels that's more comfortable for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's got these like half siblings that she's connected to become friends with.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas with her mom has not fully embraced her because she loves Gloria.
And her mom can't get over that. It feels like betrayal to her.
She feels betrayed.
Right. It feels like betrayal.
And that's a hard thing. And so for me, I'm like, that's where we need to do this work. So like in the show with Ayanla, she kind of went in focusing on Kamaya. And if I were going on this course of treatment, I wouldn't have even recorded anything. I would have went to the mother.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the key to this healing is going to be through the mother being able to release the trauma that happened to her.
Right.
And and all the pain she felt from the community thinking she sold her own child to be able to work to get her to a place that no matter what Kamaya says to her, she doesn't project or lash out or react.
Because Kamaya didn't experience any type of trauma surrounding this until she found out her mother abducted her.
And that's a trauma dump.
Yes.
It's so hard.
Right. It's and she's got this wall up where she's saying, oh, I'm fine with it. It's cool. Like, we ain't even got to tell nobody.
Right.
Where Shamara is spending 18 years in pure torture.
Yep. And nobody, and not really getting the sympathy, getting no closer to any leads or anything.
Nope.
So there's a lot of tension between them, and this is an ongoing thing, like to this day, really. You know, one of the things that Shamara said in an interview was that I wish she'd never been found. That, like, one of the worst days was finding her, because it's kind of like you had, and you know, this dream, right, this idea of what your daughter is or what she would be, only to find out. Go ahead.
And like what being reunited would look like.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to think, well, when I find her, she's going to be happy that this other woman wasn't her mother.
Right. And let me tell you something. You say don't read the comments, but I've been reading all the comments on these articles.
So many people
are like, well, she was better off with the kidnapper. And you know what? That's a messed up thing to say.
Yeah.
But when you look at the lives, right? You look at the lifestyles. You had this kind of six. And it wasn't just that she was a teenager. She was running the streets. She had a baby with a drug dealer who was significantly older. She did not have a stable place to live. She was in and out of juvenile detention and had all these run-ins with the law. Like, her life was not going in the way that you would want, you would think is the best to bring a child into.
Correct.
And then when you look at how she's responding to all of this and how she's reacting, you're like, okay, maybe some of it is trauma, but maybe some of it is just who she is, part of her personality, because of all the stuff that she had to deal with. Okay. And I find that this story is like super, super sad, because this girl is caught in between, you know, what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
But then what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This woman that raised her took amazing care of her and loved her. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to cover this story because this is a recovery story, right? We already had two cold cases. Right. We wanted to give some kind of recovery story where a girl was found. She was found alive. She was found, you know, healthy and good. But it's the aftermath of this and kind of thinking, like, what happens when girls are found?
They're found.
Based on whatever may have happened to them, whether they were trafficked, right? How do you reconnect them with their families?
Right.
If they were raised by somebody else, what does that reunification process look like?
Mm-hmm.
Are black families and black girls getting the same love and attention and support that maybe some others would? Remember when Elizabeth Smart was reconnected? I know she got tons of, you know, support. And that, and she still suffered, you know. Like, we know that black girls and black families are not getting that kind of love and that support and that therapeutic, you know, forming that therapeutic alliance as needed. So I was, really taken by this story. And I just want to mention before we close out that there was a really good movie made called Stolen by My Mother.
Came out in January.
Which features one of the finest women on the planet, Niecy Nash. Okay. Yes. Just 1 second for Niecy Nash.
We love her.
We love her on this show. She's a friend in our head, as they say.
Yes.
But she plays Gloria Williams to a T.
Yeah, she does. She does a really great job.
Amazing.
So check it out.
The film
streaming.
Is produced by Robin Roberts.
Yes, Robin Roberts. Is
that ABC?
Yeah, I don't know. Good Morning America.
She's a veteran journalist.
She's the awesome woman. She's a sister. That's all that really matters. So she's producing this, and this because the story was so big. So check that out.
It's been on Lifetime like three times.
Yeah, Lifetime. If you have Lifetime on demand, but I think I saw it on Hulu.
Yeah.
So if you can go on Hulu, Stolen by My Mother, the Kamaya Mobley story. And then we watched that. We watched her interview with Ayanla Van Zandt. We did our research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of different stories. Again, the Florida Times one, the piece that I cited, go read that. Because it's really in depth. It's really in depth from Shamara's side and just all the resentment and the pain that she felt over this reunion. Gloria is serving 18 years.
Yes.
She was sentenced, I think she was 51 or 52 when she was sentenced.
Uh-huh.
She's serving 18 years for this kidnapping and for all of this. Kamaya is still very much connected with her.
Yes.
That is her mama.
Yes, it is.
It's going to be her mama.
That's it.
And we can only really hope that they get, this family gets the support that they need.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. Thanks for rocking with us. This was a show.
That was a roller coaster.
It's a roller coaster.
Black Girl Missing podcast is researched, written, and produced by us. It is a labor of love by three concerned black women who want justice for missing black girls. Today's episode was written by Feminisa Jones and produced by Alexia Brown in the studio. You can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Be sure to follow us on social media. We're at Twitter at BLK Girl Missing, Black Girl Missing. Facebook is Black Girl Missing Pod. Instagram is Black Girl Missing Podcast. You can visit our website for more information, blackgirlmissingpod.com. Contact us on social media or email us if you have any tips, any feedback, any names of any girls that you'd like us to look into at blackgirlmissingpodcast@gmail.com. We thank you all for tuning in again, and we will see you next time.
Thank you so much. Have a good week. Do cachorro está em cima. Mas concorrência treme. Sabe que quem manda a gente.